It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley are here. Who better to explain what happened when Microsoft acquired Nokia? And we'll talk about the prospects for Stephen Elop to become the next CEO at Microsoft. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley, episode 327, recorded September 5th, 2013. Nokisoft. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, visit squarespace.com and don't forget to use the offer code Windows9. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show all about Nokia and its various branches and sub-branches and divisions and subsidiaries. Paul Theron is here from the supersite for Nokia. That's NokiaSupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley from All About Microsoft, Nokia.com. I'm just being silly. Hey, guys, how are you? Good to see you. Crazy week.
Yeah.
You think?
The stories just keep on coming. Well, it's funny.
Leo, I spent Tuesday in a fetal position on the floor, just rolling around and tumbling.
He did, actually.
We've been talking about this as a possibility for years. And
I know, but pretty that's much like said, saying,
pretty much concluded
maybe I'll have some horrible disease and die someday, and then it happens.
Is it
it's
really
still
that
kind
bad?
Of shocking. It's
Is like, it that bad?
No, but, no. You know, it's hard to explain how something that we expected to happen, that we sort of predicted would happen, how different it is when it happens.
Here's, okay, from Business Insider, this is what, to me, made the most coherent sense, and I'd love for you guys to explain.
I can't believe you're reading from Business Insider.
I know. Maybe it was Business Week. Anyway, it was three reasons why Microsoft bought Nokia. One is the Microsoft-Nokia partnership ended in 2014, and of course there's reason to think perhaps Nokia, struggling as it was, might either abandon the business entirely or turn to Android for its next version of phone.
That's speculation.
I believe that's correct.
The timing.
Oh, right. No, it's true. I'm sorry. Sorry. Right. Oh, obviously,
true.
That's true.
Okay.
Number
two, Stephen Elop, who is a former Microsoftie, now CEO at Nokia. Did a great job at least starting to turn that company around, despite the fact that it's about to go out of business. And he did a good job. He kind of nursed it back to life.
Listen, when the plane is hurtling toward the earth and someone hands you the steering wheel, I mean.
Yeah. And you could argue even before this might have been a front runner for Microsoft CEO. Now it looks like an Apple next move. You get the company and, what comes along for the ride? Mr. Elop. So that's two. And then the third, and the thing that put me over the top why this made sense, is Microsoft's not using U.S. dollars. They're using overseas money that they would, if they brought back into the U.S. for stock buyback or dividend, would have to pay 35%.
So it's not going to impact shareholders.
It doesn't impact shareholders. It's almost free money from that point of view.
That's correct.
It is free money. In fact, if they paid extra, it'd be like they were making money.
Right. Pay more. They got $2.5 billion.
If they bought BlackBerry with money like that, maybe it'd be like the gift that keeps on giving.
$2.5 billion in patents they may well have needed. We don't know what the strategic value of those is. Plus, a mere $5 billion for
actually,
Nokia.
Let me make a comparison that I think might be kind of interesting for people. Last year, Google closed a deal to buy Motorola Mobility for what, $12.5 billion. $12.5 billion. And I think we all know that the reason they bought them was for that patent portfolio, which, let's face it, is not exactly working out very well for them right now. Microsoft is getting a company that has probably the most well-regarded and respected and legitimate patent portfolio with regards to mobile technologies in the world for half that. A little more than that.
And I don't think you can ignore the fact that they are not only the best Windows phone maker, they're pretty much the only Windows phone maker.
They make 80%, right?
Yeah, and
of course they will make 100% once this deal closes, because if you're Samsung,
also
HTC,
rank speculations.
Yeah.
You would think on that.
But. Yeah. So does what – now, I don't know where I read that. I'll find the quote. But that seemed to me – those three arguments seemed to me pretty compelling argument. I think you go to the board with that, the board's going to say, yeah, I think we should acquire Nokia.
I think the way Mary Jo and I said this earlier in the week, because we did some
special –
You were
on their special. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that – certainly this deal was born of necessity. That I'm not sure that we'll ever know the full story, but clearly – situations converged where this kind of had to happen, though.
Yeah, something that might not have made sense a year ago.
Yep, or in June. You know,
right. Something some that reason. Makes a lot more sense with Ballmer stepping down, Elop sitting there in the wings, a company that is looking at the end of its Microsoft licensing in a few short months. All of that makes sense. And then you're not even spending real money. You're spending Euro dollars.
It's like funny money.
Like Euro Disney. It looks like real Disney, but it's not.
Yeah, we bring it back our Euros from our vacation and we just roll them into the toilet paper roll because
they're colorful.
Yeah.
No, I just it all makes kind of sense, frankly.
It does. You know, on the Android part, that's the part a lot of people are kind of iffy about. Like, would Nokia ever go Android, or was that what I would bet, based on some of the new stories that are out today in the New York Times and All Things D, I would bet Nokia probably used that as a threat, right? And they said, hey, you guys, we might go Android when our contract is up with you in 2014. It wasn't like really like, hey, we're ready to go Android. That's my take, that it was more like, hey, let's throw that out there and see if that gets you guys to the bargaining table with us.
It's a credible threat, though. When I look at the 1020 and I think, gosh, if they put Android on that, I'd buy that phone in a heartbeat.
See, I had the opposite reaction, but I understand why people say that. And I know, and by the way, it's fair to say, in fact, I kind of wonder why no one has done this. And we might have talked about this earlier in the week, this notion that, you know, an HTC or a Nokia or whoever would release the same phone. Here's a version for Windows Phone. Here's a version for Android.
Both Samsung and HTC were taking warmed over Android hardware and putting Windows Phone on.
Well, rather than the warmed over thing. In other words, like when you look at something like an HTC One X or whatever that more recent phone is, there have been rumors, and it may still happen, that some version of that would come out for Windows Phone this fall, you know, a quad-core processor or whatever. But when HTC does something like that, the phone they release will look different than the HTC One X. What I'm saying is just release two versions of it, you know, one at the same time. You know, here's the window. You could choose your OS. I mean, obviously the buttons on the front would have to be different to accommodate the requirements of the license on the Windows Phone side. But otherwise, why couldn't they be the same?
I guess because it might confuse consumers, right? Like consumers don't even know if they have a Windows Phone half the time. Right? I mean, we know, but the average people.
I don't know if I would. I think it would also... Right now, I think you're selling more Windows phones than ever before because Nokia is building such great hardware. People are buying it.
Yep.
They're buying the hardware.
Well, because they see the devices and they're like, yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. But if you make it available on Android, I don't know if you're going to get that.
Sure.
Those purchases. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. And that's the thing. And I agree that threatening Microsoft with Android makes plenty of sense, but Nokia not going Android, I think, was the right decision for that company and remains the right decision for that company.
Aren't they still struggling, though? I guess they're slowly growing in market share, but it feels like they're...
Yeah, they're still struggling.
Yeah, they're definitely struggling, yeah.
What are the
I mean, Microsoft had to finance them as part of this deal, right? They gave them financing. Sure.
It's like when you sell someone your house, but then you give them a loan to help them buy the house.
It's two. They're really two threats. One, they might go Android. Two, they might go out of the phone business.
Right.
Completely.
And that would be... That would be a disaster for Microsoft, right? Like, that couldn't be worse.
Oh, my God, yeah. Can you imagine?
So you're going to roll off the OEMs now, because unless they do what Google did. Did Google very, I think, successfully build a firewall between Google and Motorola and convince the OEMs?
Maybe too effectively, right?
I mean, you know, I love my Moto X, but it's not the latest version of Android. No. I mean,
not a Nexus device, you know?
Yeah. So, I guess I don't see any indication Microsoft's going to do that. So they probably rolled off Samsung, HTC, and the other companies making Windows phones. They may have also rolled off those RT tablets. Nokia is going to probably make an RT, right? Windows
supposedly,
RT. That means probably it's Microsoft's going to be making the RT and Windows phone hardware, and that's it. right?
I think it's important that Microsoft be the only company making an RT device, you know? Keep it pure.
Well, you'd love it. You'd love an ecosystem. At least there's still Windows.
So what? There was a story today, I think in Slate, it was RIP Windows. And I thought myself, here we go. You know, here's some jerk spouting off, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I read this and it's actually, you know, fair to say, I don't think Windows is dead, but it's possible that this is the beginning stages of the reversal of Microsoft's long-term policy, where the way that they've been successful for years and years, for decades, is to licensing Windows and having it be sold on a multiple devices from multiple manufacturers.
By the way, this article, RIP Windows by Farhad Manju, is also RIP Farhad. He just took a job at the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Okay, but he makes a good Farhad point. Stuff is done now, Android is given away for free. It's a completely different type of thing. And, you know, Microsoft has to change something. And the baby steps of, well, we're going to make our own first party hardware is not the end game. It's kind of a step toward, you know, we're Apple, you know, and I'm not actually sure that that's the right way to go. And I don't know. You look at the world of today and it's hard not to say Android has done to iOS what Windows did to the Mac. Why isn't Microsoft doing that?
Right.
You know?
Well, Microsoft's doing the Apple thing. In fact, more and more, it looks like Microsoft's restructuring is similar.
Microsoft has never succeeded at being Apple, Leo. That's the problem.
They're trying really hard.
I can grow a mustache, but I'm not Geraldo Rivera.
They're doing the vertical integration thing.
It just doesn't make sense.
Well, I think they're picking a funny time to become Apple, because frankly, I think the Apple strategy is being eaten alive by Android. Ecosystem lock-in ain't what it used to be.
And by the way, with Microsoft pushing integrated services across all of the stuff that they do, Office, Xbox, you know, and Xbox, not just games, but entertainment, SkyDrive, all of that stuff that they offer, maybe this is the time to walk away from the old way of doing Windows, that the value of Windows is that you keep people on your platform and then they consume more of your other services, and that's how you make money.
If ever
maybe
there were a time.
Giving away Windows Phone.
If ever there were a time, this is it, right?
Yep. They shouldn't be copying Apple. They should be copying.
That's going to be the way they're going, right? Like when we talked on Windows Weekly, I think it was when you weren't here, though, Paul, about the idea of Windows 365. We did it without you.
Well, we didn't dare do it in front of you.
No, but this makes a ton of sense, right? If you have devices, they have some bare bones Windows, and then you sell a subscription. So every year you get an update to that, whatever's on there, right? And that's how Windows starts evolving and becoming a service, right?
Yes. God, I got to get off this podcast and write this up.
You want to take a little hiatus?
Microsoft is copying the wrong company.
Yeah. Who should they copy?
Google.
And how should they copy them?
Everywhere that they can, Leo. as much as possible.
I think they're copying both of them in a way, right?
Yeah.
What would ELOP do?
Right. This is my next T-shirt. What would Stephen ELOP do? He would betray Finland, Leo. That's what he would do.
Yes, he betrayed Finland.
Yeah.
How dare you?
He had to be suspicious when he didn't move his family.
Yeah.
That should have been the clue.
Nokia LA. So I thought Horace Didiou, who was a former Nokia guy, did some very interesting analysis of this. One of the things he said is, who's buying whom?
Right.
Yeah.
And his point was, you know, when you do a purchase like this, you talk about resources because you can measure. You could say, well, they have 31,000 employees. They have factories in, you know, Finland and China, whatever. Yeah. This is the resources. And generally, that's where the dollars, you know, are allocated to. But he says, when you buy a company, you buy three things, three values. Resources is the easy one to measure. There's processes, how things are done. And certainly, Nokia seems to have a very good process for creating value in phones. And then there's priorities. And that's what he says that's going to be kind of intriguing. He says a company only can have one set of priorities, one business model, one raison d'etre. And he says this may very well be what you've just been talking about in a way.
May we well be?
May we well be the absorption of priorities from Nokia into Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, by the way, there's precedent for this. This is the company that bought Skype for $8.5 billion and then proceeded to let that brand new division run roughshod over the rest of the company.
I mean, we've even talked about the former Tony, what is it? Bill Tony? Bates. Tony Bates.
Tony Stark. Yeah.
Tony Stark, the former former CEO of Skype, maybe being the next CEO. He's a strong contender.
That would be like Apple buying Next and let their CEO run Apple. That's crazy. Why would you ever do that?
Mm. Mm. Well, the question is, how did Bill Gates and the board perceive the situation? And it seems as if they're being very activist at this point, right? I mean,
with regards to what?
Well, dumping Ballmer, buying Nokia, they're moving.
Well, death breeds alacrity thing. Right?
They're running as fast as they can. Yeah.
You know, when you go to the doctor and he's like, hey, there's a big black mark on your chest. You know, things
focuses the mind remarkably, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look at the stories, though, like especially the two today, New York Times and All Things D, which obviously Microsoft had a big hand in placing, right? Because talk about all the backroom anecdotes and deals of how this went down. And every one of these reports say Ballmer led this whole thing. Like it wasn't the board. It was Ballmer. And he was like the one flying back and forth to Finland. He was negotiating. He was at the table. I mean, so it's kind of hard to say this was the board doing this. And it sounds like in the middle of the negotiations, they had to tell Nokia and say, hey, by the way, Ballmer's retiring.
The deal's still on.
Hey, we're still going forward.
Maybe Ballmer manufactured... Look, there's nobody questions Steve Ballmer's absolute, undying, lifelong devotion to Microsoft. Yeah. That is not in question. From his days as college roommate to Bill Gates to right now, there has never been another woman in Ballmer's life. And I wouldn't be at all surprised. This is the same thing. He sees this company sliding down the hill.
This company has got some serious baggage, and what man would want her now? I mean, it's...
You mean Nokia?
Microsoft. Oh. I mean, you know, we still come back to the central issue that Nokia
gets... She's been
written
hard, put away wet, but there's still... there's still some life in the old mare.
Okay, but it's Microsoft is so big and so complicated that adding 33,000 employees or whatever that is...
Yeah.
Yep. Is a distraction at the worst possible time, at a time when this company is staring in the headlamps like a deer in the street, and now they have this to deal with, right? Yep. I assume we're going to remake the Windows Phone team, which is suddenly a very vital and important part of Microsoft, despite being on the back burner for the past 3 years. The lineup of executives that are in this division or whatever they're going to call it is going to look like an IKEA catalog because these people are all going to be from Finland and have crazy names. And they're not, are they going to move to Redmond? Are they going to be in, how do you do this? Like this company was already too complex, right? And now we have this. And by the way, Nokia was the best thing that ever happened to Windows Phone. But you know what? This is like when Microsoft integrated Windows Live into Windows. And I remember I said to those guys who used to be MSN before that, that there were only two ways this can go out. You're going to inspire those people to move more rapidly or they're going to kill you. And the former happened. We had that thing where like, oh, no, now we're going to have new versions of Windows Live Essentials every year or whatever. And Vista came, 7 came, 8 came, and we had two updates the entire time. Yeah. And Nokia is this wonderful organization. They've been on a tear this year, all of these product releases, and now you're going to pull it into the slowest moving part of Microsoft at a time when they're supposedly making this grand transition as a company. I don't understand how this is going to work. I have concerns is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, they're concerned. The timing is tough. But you could also argue the timing might work for them because, yes, Windows Phone has been the slowest moving part of the company. And yes, they're about to put the wraps on GDR3, which is the last minor update to the Windows Phone 8 operating system before the blue one coming next year. So if this transaction does close by or before the beginning of 2014, it'll be a good time for them to be coming in when the whole unified operating system team under Terry Myerson is going to be dealing with Windows Phone Blue, the next version of Windows, and then just having finished up Xbox One operating system and getting that out to market in November and then moving forward. So I don't know when the right time is to do something that complicated, right? But at least they're going to be coming, stepping into the process while a lot of things are in play, and they'll actually at least be able to influence what's happening.
Yeah,
I'm trying to be the glass half full here.
No, that's fair. There's no right time. In other words, we can't point to some point in time and say that would have been better. I mean, Microsoft made that transition from the old Silverlight, you know, Windows Phone 7X infrastructure to the new Windows 8 based infrastructure. They're still working toward combining in some way over a period of time the various products they have, you know, Windows 8/RT/Windows Phone/Xbox One, apparently. Whether there's a single app format that works across all of those over time, I don't know. I'm not even sure that makes any sense, but certainly bringing them closer together makes some sense. But man, talk about throwing a wrench into a machine that already wasn't running very well. it's kind of a tough thing.
Yeah.
I'm
going to go lay on the floor.
I did not expect this. I thought that you would see this a little more positively. I understand the challenges. I think the challenge is 31,000 Finnish employees, but
you know what it is? No, it's the Windows Live thing. It really is. It's an organization that I care deeply about that I feel has been doing a tremendous job. And now I'm worried. It's not because like Microsoft is evil or the Windows guys or the Windows Phone guys in this case are goons or something. It's not that. It's just that it's a much bigger organization. There's a certain kind of cement-like quality to the huge hierarchies inside of Microsoft. And now they got to work this stuff into it. And it's just – this was already not moving well, you know. Yeah. And I'm just nervous about it.
I'm hoping Nokia has the opposite influence, right? Like they actually kind of get the lead out at Microsoft, right?
And
And Elop's going to head up the devices division, right? So that's going to have in it Lumia phones, their tablets when they come out, the Asha phones. They're also going to have Surface in there, right? So he's going to be the head of Surface.
He's hardware.
Yeah. Unless he becomes CEO. Yeah.
Unless he becomes CEO.
He's going to be CEO.
That's the thing.
I mean, so in other words, you're right. If this guy running devices and services, or what's it called? Devices, whatever it's called.
Devices and studios, I think, is.
Yeah. Studios.
Because it also adds in the games.
Like the game studios. Yeah.
Because Damn. Xbox Live goes with operating
Come system. On. He's going to be CEO. There's no way you do this. There's no way. Well, I get. He's going to be CEO.
I'm not convinced he is.
If he is CEO. Here's going to be the saving grace. If he is, he kind of throws what Mary Jo just said in a little bit of a warp because what happens then. But there is another possibility, which is that someone from Nokia becomes the person in charge of that device.
Don't you think that before Steve and Elop said, okay, he said, but who am I going to be reporting to next year?
He can't guarantee Elop that you're going to become CEO, right? That's not possible because this is something that requires the board, but
he can certainly say, look,
you're going to be in line for it. I mean, you're one of the candidates.
He's a candidate. He is a candidate, you know? No question.
But I would want to know. Maybe Steve and Elop didn't have the option. Maybe he had to sell. Maybe they had to sell Nokia. But I would have wanted to know if I'm Steve and Elop. Well, who am I reporting to? Yeah, I love that idea. I'm going to run devices and toy stores. But who do I report to in a year?
Yeah.
You're going to report to the new CEO.
By the way, no one
but
at
who
Microsoft.
Who is that? Is it going
to
be?
No one at Microsoft knows the answer to that question.
Nobody knows yet.
Nobody knows. That's not, you can't.
So
there's no promise.
As Steve and Elop, I would say that's like buying a house without knowing what's in the basement. I would want to know that.
Yep. Well, everybody unfortunately, wants that's to know the, it. That's the current reality of Microsoft. There's no.
Is it? Did he? Could he? I mean, I don't know what the structure of Nokia is. I presume they have a board like an American company, and the board is the one who decided what to do.
Yeah, right.
I don't think we can make any assumptions.
I don't know,
that.
But Elop, and I don't. So I doubt Elop had the power to kill that. But what he had the power to do is say, "Hey, I'm not sticking around." You need me for this transition. You need me desperately. You buy Nokia without me, it's doomed.
I think they wanted him. And by the way, you know, Stephen Elop's family lives in the Redmond area. I think him coming back was very natural.
I think they made a deal. And I think Bill Gates took a walk with Stephen Elop through the woods, brought him over to the 500,000 square foot underground bunker that Bill lives in.
And it is, said, you're right about that.
And said, see this, all this, someday this could be yours. he said, look, I can't, we're not going to announce this. I can't tell you, I can't say this publicly. But just so you know, the job will be yours. That, I think so.
Wow.
I think the reason that has some weight, and there are all kinds of backroom deals that happen like that. But I also would say, if he is the next CEO, a lot of people are going to say, you brought in somebody who isn't fresh blood, who isn't new blood. It's going to be business as usual.
Oh, I agree with all of that.
Leading a failing company. It's not a good look for you, Microsoft.
I understand the challenges of it. I do. But yeah. I'm just saying, you don't get ELOP with Nokia if you don't make that guarantee. I'm telling you, I know his value to the company, and I'm just some guy. He knows exactly that Microsoft's $7.5 billion is meaningless without him. Is that not true?
Say that one more time.
If he heads up devices, that's a really important division at Microsoft. I'd say it's like the most
I agree. Okay. That's what I would be saying to him if I'm Bill Gates. But yeah. Stephen, you're going to be heading up devices. He says, look, I'm the CEO of Nokia, yeah, and you're going to make me a senior vice president in charge of devices and Toy Story. I want this, CEO.
This division is getting more excellent every time you mention it.
I have enough money to go live wherever I want and do whatever I want. I want CEO. If you want Nokia, I want CEO. And I think that deal was made. I think it's done.
And you know what you say if you're Steve Ballmer to Stephen Elop? Okay, go ahead and go Android, and let's see if you can make any money.
I think that's they're completely willing to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine. I mean, Nokia leaves Microsoft.
Maybe I've been watching too much Sopranos. I don't know. I just feel like.
I think Elop is probably, if you had to pick, like, who are in the top three candidates right now? He's one of the three, right? But I think Microsoft still is probably hoping they can find somebody on the outside who's going to bring a new feeling to the company, because they keep getting criticized as same old retread. And, you know, he was at Microsoft for 3 years. He ran the business division. So he obviously knows like Exchange and Unified Communications and Office. He knows a lot about Microsoft's businesses. But, you know, other people will say, well, when he was at Office, he didn't do anything. He just kind of like let them run the course. And I remember when he left, Ballmer put out a note and just said, hey, thanks for maintaining the business, Steve. See you later.
Right.
So it wasn't like there was like, wow, this guy was awesome and we're really sad he's leaving.
My only observation is that it kind of depends on how ambitious Elop is.
It does.
My only observation is that he has a considerable amount of clout at this particular junction in time. He can't kibosh the deal. I'm not saying that. But what he can say is, look, you may get Nokia, but you're not going to get me. I want some guarantees. What are you going to give me? You know, this happens all the time. When companies get sold, chief management is in a very strong position if that management is key to the operation. You might buy 31,000 employees. There's really one that matters. So what am I going to get? And it kind of comes down to what does Elop want and how ambitious he is and whether he understands the position he's in. If he's CEO material, then he should certainly understand that. He's in an extremely strong position right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. He's in a strong position. And he always has made it clear his ambition is to be a CEO. He's always said that.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Why would he want to be a senior vice president in charge of devices and bingo boards? It's not.
Because your company's going to go bankrupt if you stay.
Is it really? Was Nokia? I mean.
They weren't in risk of going bankrupt.
No, they have. They still own the third world market. Yeah. For cheap handsets.
Right.
They weren't going to be a sexy company maybe next year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they're perfect for Microsoft.
Would his board let him stay if they started really falling apart? Or would they be like, hey, you got to go. You're the one who told us to bet on Windows Phone.
Didn't you just say he turned around the company?
No.
But he didn't.
No. Yeah. I mean, this is you can make a sports comparison. Compare him to a coach who picked up a baseball or soccer team or whatever that was falling apart. And, you know, they're not a losing team. Well, actually, I guess they technically are still a losing team. But, you know, you can only turn around something like that so far. I think that what he did was incredible and the correct decisions. I think that if they had gone Android, we wouldn't have been talking about Nokia anymore. They'd
really
be gone.
Well, it is a very competitive place. So going with Windows Phone was a smart move. It was certainly a differentiator. They still have Asha. They keep talking about
By the way, there are companies who have been doing Android for years, like LG and HTC.
We're struggling.
That almost don't matter, even though they create beautiful
devices.
You
can argue that the HTC makes the best Android phone, but it is not a player.
Yeah. Yep.
Samsung's crap stuff is
people like crap, Leo. I don't know if you've ever noticed.
It's turning crappier all the time. I mean, this Note 3 with a stitched leather pleather in the back, that is ugly.
Stitched leather pleather. I'm going to get a car that has that. It's going to be like that.
So I understand like that Elop may very well not be the right guy for CEO.
But he has a good
but
shot.
But I think
at
he had a very big lever.
And
he had a lever.
He's the George H.W. Bush of the Microsoft alumni.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's paid his dues. Yeah.
And you could argue he has both devices and enterprise and service experience, right? He ran, was involved in enterprise at Microsoft, and now he's a device guy at Nokia. Here's a guy who has experience in both halves of the business.
I don't know how we rate his time at Microsoft because, during his tenure in running the business division, they released yet another version of Office. So
I don't know anything about him, frankly.
I don't either. I mean, I remember he appeared at whatever the launch event was, say probably Office 2010 or whatever it was. And it was on the set of SNL, where SNL is in New York.
Right.
I remember the location. That was more notable. And then he came out and talked, and I thought, who the heck is this guy? And I think, he must have taken over when Steve Sinofsky left to go do Windows, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think that was around that time. Or was he there before that? And then Kurt Delbini came in there somewhere too, but
So this isn't a joke. There is a company called Nokia.
Well, by the way, it is a joke.
It is a joke, but yes, there is.
Is it a joke?
The best, this is why it's a joke. If you go to Nokia.com, it's a company that's selling Kia cars.
Get your new Kia. They didn't get the domain name.
No, so that was a dumb little thing for them.
Yeah.
Look, it's Nokia.
It is.
In Irving, Louisville, and Plano, Texas.
Oh,
it is Central Texas Kia. That's where you can get a new Kia.
Is that like the new Kia Forte? Do you have the new Kia Lumia? Do you think people ask them for that?
Well, maybe they need a better name. But that is it the actual name of a company? I don't understand.
By the way, you could try to research this company. I think it exists in its head.
All you find is Kia. If I Google N-E-W-K-I-A, all you find is Kia dealerships.
Right. And then the news story
story on ZDNet. Right.
Yeah, I don't think this thing actually exists. I think this is a fantasy that this guy's created for himself.
Thomas Ziliakis is the new...
It's like one of the guys that drove Nokia into the ground over the past decade thinks their strategy now is wrong. So he's created Nokia so he can do it again to
the new McAfee.
Right. He actually tried to buy Nokia. He tried to raise money and buy them so that he could make them an Android company, but that didn't work out.
Looks like the bad guy from Armand Asante movie or something, like one of those B-budget kind of sci-fi movies.
I'm telling you, he's McAfee. All he needs is a few guns, some bath crystals, and a house in Belize. And
yep, and he's there.
He's there.
It's like some comedian, I can't think of his name right now, said that the only thing Bill Gates needs is a monocle and a Cheshire cat. And
he really does look like Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
I think Dennis Miller said that.
They're based in Singapore. That's why our correspondents over there have got this story at ZDNet. And he used to be Asia Pacific CEO for Nokia at one point, I think.
So now they're going to build Android phones?
They want to hire ex-Nokia people to go and do a deal with the part of Nokia that remains after Microsoft bought the handset part and take their know-how and patents and then build Android phones with the people who are disenfranchised from Nokia who wish they had gone Android. You can't make
I think
this up.
That's not a small group because I look at things like Mego. Nokia had some very interesting, innovative development. Symbian is still an amazing OS. There were smart engineers at Nokia who were not making Windows phones.
Yeah.
Wow, very interesting. To me, that shows some kind of corporate upheaval that doesn't bode well. You bought a company that is maybe not the most unified company, right? When companies are troubled, under the surface, all sorts of bad things are happening. And it could be Nokia is a boat anchor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Apparently, Huawei, the Chinese phone manufacturer, was in talks to buy BlackBerry, has decided not to. So I think Microsoft could pick up BlackBerry, too, for a song.
But, yeah. So what, I mean,
then they could own all the losing Leo, platforms.
Let me ask a simple math question. This is, you'll enjoy this one.
Yeah.
Do three turkeys make an eagle? You know?
Wow.
That's a good, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
So I just, we'll just watch. It won't happen for a quarter or so, but yeah. I think there may be a surprisingly early announcement of the new CEO at Microsoft, and I think his initials will be SE, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know what, Leo? You should actually go and bet. You can bet on the next CEO, Ladbrokes, I think. And
you don't make much because I'm pretty sure Elop is
he is leading by far.
By a bunch. Yeah.
He is. But you still should bet.
I feel very confident. Let me see what the odds.
I feel very mixed in my views. And it's not because I think he would be a terrible CEO. I just don't know how much Microsoft wants to portray that they're bringing in new people. And it's, you know, when you go for a new CEO, a lot of it is also about the image, right? And you've got a lot of things changing right now. So is it a good message that you bring in somebody who is seen as ex-Microsoft? And I don't know. Not damaged goods. I'm not trying to say that, but.
But I'll say it.
Okay.
Steve, according to Ladbroke, which is the big bookmaking, English bookmaking company, Elop, at last time I checked, is 5-1. Mm-hmm. That's still pretty long odds. I mean, if I bet $100, I make 500, right? Yeah. Kevin Turner, 6-1. Steven Sanofsky, 8-1. Can you bet against that? I would bet strongly.
Right. I want to win when Steven Sanofsky doesn't become CEO.
Yeah. Chi Lu, Julie Larson Green, Tony Bates should be better than 10-1.
I think so too.
Yeah. Because I think that, frankly, he should be number one or two on this list.
Me too. And Satya Nadella should be high too. It's just people who do these, they don't always know anything.
Yeah. I see Vic Gundotra is on the list, 25-1. I don't think so.
By the way, author of the turkeys comment I alluded to earlier.
And Bill Gates, you can get 50-1 odds on Bill Gates becoming the next CEO of Microsoft. Yeah, these guys are idiots. But, you know, 5-1, I might lay down a bet. I don't know, is that legal in this jurisdiction? 5-1. COO Kevin Turner 6-1. I don't know.
He's not going to get
it. That's the other thing. There are no candidates that leap to mind except Tony Bates.
No, there aren't. That's the problem.
We don't know the outsiders, right?
Right. Mary Jo made the point earlier. I don't remember if it was privately or on one of the shows we did, but that, you know, maybe the next CEO of Microsoft should be an engineer type.
Right.
Oh yeah, totally.
And,
And when you think about moving from Gates to Ballmer to Turner, you know, that's it's kind of the wrong trajectory, right?
That's what happened at Apple. They got the ops guy in there running Apple.
Yeah.
I'd love to see an outsider, somebody who has real experience in other businesses. I know Alan Mulally's not on the list because he's retiring. You need the young Alan Mulally who can come in and take a company with great value and express that value and turn it into the company it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next CEO is going to make or break Microsoft, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say that about a company this big with revenues like that, but
it
feels like this is a big job. And, you know, look what Marissa Meyer's doing at Yahoo. I mean, I think you get the right person, you can maybe re-energize it. Jury's still out whether she'll actually make a company that's viable, but the attention is back anyway. We're going to take a break. We're talking Windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Hey, I really appreciate you guys joined Tom Merritt for breaking news when the Nokia announcement happened. And I think that's one of the things that makes this makes me very happy about the network is that you can get really great commentary and expertise when important stories break.
Yeah, and actually I should say, you know, people respond very quickly You know, I sort of send an email out like, I don't know if you guys want to do this, but...
Oh, we want to do it. Yeah.
You know, no, it's nice. I mean...
Well, I feel very fortunate that we have really two of the premier observers of Microsoft. I mean, I don't think there's anybody better out there. So
yeah, Tom and I is a great.
Our show, and on that note, our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the secret behind the best websites in the world. We're huge fans of Squarespace. We run our blog on it. Frankly, I wish my other websites were as reliable as our Squarespace site. Squarespace is both hosting and software. Everything you need. That's why they call it the all-in-one platform. For commerce, yes, they have an e-commerce solution that's the best in the business. For a great-looking portfolio, for your next blog even. It's so affordable at $8 a month for an annual plan that it's fine for a blogging platform. The beauty of this is because they run the hosting and the software running on top of it, they're so tightly integrated. Squarespace sites never go down. They're always secure. Whenever they improve the platform, and they do it almost daily, you get those improvements immediately. New features, new designs, improved support, 20 new beautiful templates for you to start with. They've won numerous design awards. Very easy to use, but at the same time, if you're a professional, their developer platform is superb, bar none, with a color coding, syntax aware editors. You could do CSS, JavaScript, HTML5. The price is right. The features are right. And I'll tell you, if you're a developer, look at the code underlying Squarespace. You'll see how gorgeous it is. They take just as much pride in the back-end code as they do in the front-end design. I'm so impressed with Squarespace. They do the hosting. They do the software. You do the content. You do the sales. And take a look at the prices. If you want to do e-commerce, $24 a month when you buy an annual plan. That gets you unlimited bandwidth. You never get a bandwidth bill. Unlimited physical or digital products. Plus, in the mobile store, mobile or desktop, by the way, and that's true of every Squarespace design. They're always mobile ready. Automatically. You get inventory tracking, tax calculations, shipping calculations. You can even add coupons. It's just great. Buy the annual plan. You'll get a custom domain name free. They'll hook it up. Now, here's the deal. You can start the trial without a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com and click get started. You'll have full run of the place for 2 weeks. But after you've played with it, imported your data, made it look the way you want, tried 10 different templates, if you say, this is nice, I like this, please do us a favor and use the offer code Windows9 when you buy. You'll get 20% off, and Squarespace will know you heard it on Windows Weekly. Squarespace.com. Remember that offer code, Windows and the number 9, because we're in September, at squarespace.com. We're talking about Redmond, Xbox. Hey, I saw the Xbox is in production.
Finally.
Finally. We're going to get it in November. So excited. So excited.
When we were doing the show notes, Paul's like, I cannot believe you don't want to put the Xbox date as number one.
I made it number two.
I wrote that in all caps.
Yeah, November 22nd, a week before my birthday. My birthday comes early this year.
Awesome. And a week after the Sony PS4 launch.
Oh, really?
Wow.
You can't tell me these guys aren't looking at each other over their shoulders, you know? When are you launching? I don't know. When are you launching?
Well, right.
When are you launching?
How late can we go and still be holiday?
Yeah, that is fairly late, isn't it? 1 month before Christmas, but in time. Mm-hmm. Will there be shortages? Of course there will. Yeah,
of course.
They're taking orders though, still, right?
Yeah, I pre-ordered mine. In fact, I'm getting the first day model or whatever it is.
Sony said that they sold over 1 million pre-orders. Microsoft said that they sold out. Almost sold out of all of their pre-orders.
Oh.
But they never said how many.
Almost.
It was 36,000 pre-orders.
Yeah, almost sold out. Anyway, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
And I know you are too.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of weirdness. I should say there has been a lot of weirdness around the Xbox One, obviously, during this launch period. But I honestly, nothing has really tempered my belief that this thing is going to be pretty amazing.
I did not order a PS4.
172 straight hours when it first comes out.
We know you, Paul. He's pissed off that they put it on the iPad.
You know, I just had to download it to see what it's like. If this thing is good, I'm going to go kill myself.
Amateurs.
The islands.
Is it a full game? Because they did the zombies
before.
It's
a Call of Duty game.
What? They can't do that.
Well, first person is terrible on touch, so at least I got that.
It is, because you have these really weird on-screen doohickeys. I hate that.
Yep.
I hate it when that happens. We didn't mention this, but is Value Act the activist investor that has like a few, like 0.04% of Microsoft stock, some small amount.
I think it's 0.8%.
0.8%.
It is. 0.8%.
Yeah. Still enough to threaten a proxy
battle.
All
you need to get on the board. Like I said, like this company will capitulate to anybody.
So are they actually getting a seat on the board?
It looks like it. They've cleared the path for them to take a seat on the board.
If you read that filing, they're getting a seat. And the only question is when. And by the way, when literally means as soon as is legally possible.
Right. It says starting at the first quarterly board meeting after November 2013. So it could be this year. Right.
All that tells me is that the board is meaningless. We looked at the board last week and said, who are these people?
The board is meaningless.
It's meaningless.
I think I referred to some of their members as being the guy who played Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street.
It's Colonel Sanders. It is. There's John Thompson is important. Bill Gates is important.
Yeah.
Steve Ballmer is important for a little longer. And the rest of them feel like placeholders. Do you think that's what they're saying? As well, Value Act, go ahead. Have your seat at the board. I mean, it is a vote.
They did I think, to stop a proxy battle. Right.
They didn't want that proxy battle.
There was thoughts that Value Act was going to get on the board and start agitating and bad-mouthing. And
so this is the tit for tat.
Here's a conspiracy theory I literally just made up in my head 10 seconds ago. What if the plan is to get them to be on the board after the board has picked the new CEO? In other words, they'll time this to ensure that they don't have a say in that.
Yeah. I would not be surprised about that.
Yeah.
It's a hedge fund, we should mention.
A hedge fund.
A hedge fund. 0.8% of Microsoft's stock is worth what? How much? Millions? Billions?
Today, about $17.
The only reason this would carry weight is if the perception is that stockholders are so unhappy with Microsoft that they could actually win a proxy battle.
Yeah.
Right.
And... I mean, I'm sure it's mostly institutional investors.
Well,
right?
By the way, this company actually has a pretty well-established track record.
And, no, they're not bad. Although they do, use public pressure when needed.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, I don't think there's much argument to the fact that maybe Microsoft's strategy over the past decade should be questioned. Maybe there are things they could have done differently. I mean, my view into this whole thing has to do with products and which ones maybe they should get rid of, which ones they should keep, how maybe they should make decisions differently. But of course, what these guys are primarily concerned with is something that doesn't interest me in the slightest, which is getting more value back to shareholders, right?
It's about dividends, buybacks. Yeah. It's like Carl Icahn.
By the way, I mean, if Microsoft makes the right strategic moves and releases products that excite people, it's certainly possible that their stock price could rise and that would generate money for stockholders, shareholders.
Right.
But they're not looking at it that specifically. I mean, that would be one possibility, of course. But if they were able to do it through more dividends or through other means that are simply financial related, I mean, that's not interesting to me in the slightest. You know,
we should also mention so Value Act hasn't really said what their stance is about Microsoft. It's reorg, all that. But the one thing they said that people are reading a lot into is they've said investors have not appreciated Microsoft's back end software that it uses to power servers and databases.
And
these
software.
Guys probably don't want Microsoft to be in the device business. They probably want them to sell that off.
To be the enterprise company, right?
They want them to be the enterprise company. They want them to be IBM, and Microsoft totally does not want to go there.
They
got to
bring back office. Remember back office?
Yeah, I remember back office.
It was like the office for the back room.
Yeah.
You know, which wasn't like it sounds like an illegal gambling den of some kind. It was like the servers would be out in the back room. So before there was an exchange, they had like proxy server and they had the old version of SQL Server that was based on, I can't think of the name of the company, Cybex, whatever that company was. They had the predecessor to Exchange, like Microsoft Mail Server.
Yeah.
They had, and of course, NT Server, NT Advanced Server, or whatever those products were called at the time. Let's do that. there's your IBM, version of Microsoft right there.
So Value Act has their 0.8% stake is worth $2 billion. So they have $2 billion worth of Microsoft stock. That's not insignificant.
It's not.
I don't know if they're the largest shareholder that's not at the company, but I would guess. And so the person who will be sitting on the board is a guy, is the president of Value Act, a guy named G. Mason Morfitt.
Yep.
Awesome. I think you should talk like this.
I'm G. Mason Morfitt. Smokes a huge cigar.
I'm here to vote. Boss Hogg
from the Dukes of Hazzard.
G. Mason Morfitt.
Wow.
Yeah, wow, right?
Wow.
I know. This is unprecedented. Microsoft doesn't usually do this kind of thing with bowing to shareholder pressure like that. I mean,
they must. Their only reason they did is because they were genuinely scared of a proxy battle.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
And that means they believe that institutional shareholders anyway, people who carry enough votes to make a difference, are unhappy with the flat stock price.
And this leads to a theory I had earlier where, you know, this gives them the time to pick their own next CEO and not have a proxy fight, force that issue and maybe get them involved in that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So comparatively, we're talking about how much they own. They own, like you're saying, 0.8%. But Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer together, what do they own? They own
much
like
more than that.
It's not much. It's 9%. Like 9%.
9%. Yeah. 9%.
And they are the by far the two biggest shareholders.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like someone owns 49% of Microsoft.
No.
Yeah. No. You know, the fear, the Microsoft board fear and the top management fear is they don't want to sell off Xbox, right? They don't want to be told, you guys shouldn't do consumer devices. You really aren't that good at this, guys. So they're afraid that these guys could actually sway sentiment and make them have to do those kind of moves. And they Microsoft believes that's not what they should do. They believe that it's, you know, devices that are fueling services and services fueling devices, and that you need both to be successful. And so they don't want ValueX implied direction to become what happens.
Well,
moving on, next generation Surface Pro, Surface Pro 2. We're hearing leaks.
Yeah, information's finally starting to dribble out.
What's the timing, you think, for this? By fall?
Yeah. What's the day that Windows 8.1's coming out?
Oh,
October 18th.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know that for a fact.
That makes sense.
I bet that's a launch.
But I bet that's.
Yeah, so new version.
It makes too much sense.
Yeah.
And Paul, you think the two will launch together, right? Not like last time where one RT launches and then months go by.
Yeah, and I'm basing this on information I got that, you know, there's also a mini Surface coming, like an 8-inch version of the Surface that will not launch at the same time as the other two. It's going to be a little bit later in the year. And that's why I think the other two are launching together, because that's how that information was told to me. And that suggested to me that the other two, the replacements for the current devices, would ship at the same time.
And there's also an RT2.
Yeah, except it's not going to be called RT.
It should be called RT2T.
RTD2?
R2DT. Yeah. T2. What's it going to be called?
Just Surface 2.
Surface 2.
That'll be the
Surface
RT.
Surface 2, the quickening.
There'll be Surface 2 and Surface Pro 2.
Surface 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Sorry, Surface 2 and Surface Pro 2.
Surface 2, the Wrath of Khan. I could do this all day, Leo.
I know you can. Mr. Sequel. Okay, so, and this will be Haswell, of course.
Surface Pro, yeah.
That means good battery life.
Well, I'm disturbed about Paul's, what he's hearing on battery life. He's hearing 7 hours.
I've got a lot of pushback to that as if I, you know, invented the number, but.
No, I know you didn't.
Yeah, not quite as high as I thought. As you would think, you know.
Well, Haswell's Intel's only saying 50% improvement in battery life, so that's about right.
Four to seven, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
I think we hear Haswell and we think magic, you know.
Yeah, it's not magic.
The next one's going to have 117 hours of battery up from 4.5.
50% improvement is about right, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true.
That's what Apple got with the MacBook Air. This is a Haswell MacBook Air, went from 8 to 12.
Yeah, except that the MacBook Air 13-inch gets 12 hours of battery life.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's 50% improvement.
Okay, but that's 12 is a big number, Leo.
It's a large number. Yeah. To get me all the way to Australia.
12 hours of battery life is like 2-day battery life of normal usage. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
That would be pretty awesome.
8 gigs of RAM. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, it seems like the new Surface Pro, the Surface Pro 2, looks to be very similar to the first gen and kind of a what I would call a modest upgrade, right? Same case, you know, same. It looks like it's kind of the same, you know, other than obviously Haswell instead of Ivy Bridge. I think there are going to be RAM options on this one instead of just, I think the current one has 4 gigs of RAM. But it's, you know, it's what you would expect. And I guess if you think about the huge investment that Microsoft made just to develop these devices, you don't completely change the form factor the second time around, not just because of the expense of coming up with a new case, which, you know, I think a lot of people hope this thing would be thinner and lighter, you know, than the first version, which is admittedly kind of heavy for a tablet. But also for the accessories, right? Because you have this kind of family of accessories that's going to grow, you know, now this fall with the new devices. And you want these things to be as interchangeable as possible. And if you screw around too much with the form factor, that becomes more difficult.
Right.
But I do wonder why, you know, how is it possible that on a Pro device, it doesn't have, I don't know, 2 USB ports? I mean, is this pushing it in some way that we can't have another hole inside of the thing? It's amazing.
I think they need to use up the stock they have, right? They have all those VaporMag cases, right? And so they
probably
think,
like, why did we make 6 million of these things?
Right.
You know, yeah, right. I don't know.
And then there'll be another Surface, right? There'll be a Surface 3, and maybe that one will have 2 USB ports once they get rid of all their stock.
My ideal device, by the way, would be the Surface Pro in the body of Surface RT with that same weight, you know, because that device is so wonderful to carry and hold. Mm-hmm. And then, you have to use it, and then it becomes not so wonderful. But that device with the, like, Haswell innards or whatever, I think would be amazing. And you know, maybe they shoot for that for Surface 3. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess two thoughts about this. I mean, for the people who did hold off and are holding off, it's going to be an improvement, right? I think the 4.5 hours of battery life to 7 is good. Obviously, that's positive news. Hopefully, it doesn't run as hot. The fan on the Surface Pro can kick in at inopportune times. Hopefully, it has that kind of power management nicety. So it's an okay upgrade. It's an upgrade.
You know, I think a 2-position kickstand is enough for me to buy a new one.
Okay, but if you bought a Surface Pro, I guess one of the nice things about this one is that it doesn't blow the original Surface Pro out of the water. So you don't have to feel bad about it. You
know? Yeah,
because that is a problem with these rapid.
Releases.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, people buy an iPhone and then the iPhone 2, whatever, you know, the next one comes out. It's like, oh, why I should have waited.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, so it's not that bad. And there's no real visual differentiation. And so if these things are out, not that you'll ever see someone using a Surface, but if you do, you don't have to feel weird because you get the old one, you know, and like they look the same. Like no one has to.
Somebody will say, do you have the kickstand that goes in 2 positions?
Yeah.
Oh, you have the old kickstand, one. Like,
yeah. Cool.
Yeah, and how about the news that just broke on Win Supersite and NeoWin.net about the covers?
Ooh.
Yeah, Brad has a story on NeoWin about the power cover, which we've been waiting to hear about forever and ever. I think Panos Panay sort of implied that they were doing it back in a Reddit chat or something at the beginning of the year. Somewhere he kind of admitted or implied they would be doing this thing, and it is coming this year, but not with the launch of the devices. It's going to be a little bit later for some reason. It looks like basically a slightly thicker type cover that has a battery in it. And so, of course, it's going to be heavier as a result. And maybe that's what gets you over the top for the battery life thing. I don't have figures for how that improves it. I think it's going to vary by device. But, you know, even if it added a couple of hours of battery life, there you go. It solves the problem. You need a keyboard.
So it's, you know, there's no extra battery for touch cover, right? Only type cover, right? That's obvious.
Well, I wouldn't put. I mean, it's a separate device, right? So
yeah,
there
separate.
Be you know, we have type cover, we have touch cover, and then we're gonna have power cover.
Right, power cover. Yeah.
Yeah, which is
the
keyboard on it is the type cover keyboard.
It's the type cover keyboard. Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry,
it's the real keyboard, the Mylar Atari 400 thing.
Right. And, you know, yeah, it's going to be good. I think I was disappointed to see it won't work with the regular Surface RT, just with the Surface 2. So if you have a Surface RT, you're not going to be able to use this. Although you already have like eight-hour battery.
I don't mean to beat that one to death, but I do feel like that original RT device is going to be the one that gets obsoleted the most quickly. And this is only one indication of that. But I mean, I think... given the quality of the hardware, I shouldn't put it that way. But given the chipset that's in there, it's going to be the one that kind of falls off a little more quickly than the others. You know, like the Ivy Bridge version of the Surface Pro is going to be a viable computer for years to come. I don't know if anyone's going to be wanting, you know, is going to want to use the original Surface RT a couple years from now.
I collect ancient Microsoft gadgets.
Me too.
I still use my Zoom HD.
I know for a fact you don't have the space in your room to hold this, but in your apartment. But I will give you my Surface RTs if you promise to put them on the wall.
I have to decide, Blender or Surface RT? Blender or Surface RT? Which one
has to go? You could blend the Surface RT and make a video of it.
I could. But I like mine, so no.
Will it blend?
And they obviously, these new Surface RT, the new Surface 2 and Surface 2 Pro will ship with Windows 8.1 on them, of course.
Yep.
So
even Microsoft, screw that up. Can you imagine? I know. We're going to release it today with Windows 8. Wait, what?
And you can upgrade it later. So that'll be good too.
Good. I'm excited. Can't wait to buy them. And we have seen at IFA, have we not, new 8.1 stuff, right?
Yeah. By the way, what's the schedule on it? Can we expect more IFA revelations?
I think that's
course?
It on IFA.
What about HP? Did they do anything? They're not on the list here.
I saw something on
it. Because I have a lot of information about devices that are coming this fall, and I not all of it has
dropped.
You know, been revealed.
IFA is really a mobile devices show primarily, so it'd be phones, tablets. I don't know if you did. Yep. Maybe you would announce. It's, you know, I mean, well, maybe.
Okay, so mini
laptops.
Tablets, and I think a lot of these hybrid devices are being announced, you know, this week. For example, I think the big one so far has been that 8-inch Toshiba, right? Which I think was the one that was codenamed Malta. It's an 8-inch device, Bay Trail.
Announced today. Yep.
I mean, technically, IFA goes through the 11th, so... You could have
oh, really?
Yeah. So you have another week of crap.
Oh, good. It's like Christmas every day.
But I feel I feel like people will announce at the beginning of IFA, not at the end of IFA.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll hear about a Nokia device on day 10.
Nokia. No, from Nokia.
I still have a prototype from 2002 that I've decided to put into production.
So new yogas from Lenovo. I like the yoga a lot.
I did too.
Yeah.
I do too. And those guys, you know, they put out an 11-inch yoga last year at the launch that was RT. And they put out a 13-inch version that was Windows 8. And I remember thinking, man, if this 11-inch version was just Windows 8, this would be amazing. Of course, they've done that. And now there's a second-gen version of it available, you know, as of, I don't know when they actually ship it, but that they announced this week. And those look really nice.
Sony had its press conference today, and I think they announced new laptops, yeah.
Yep. The new Vios.
The Vio Tap. Tippity tap.
Tippity tap.
The flip and the
flip
tap.
One. Yeah.
Flip it. I love these names. Like Lenovo has Flicks. Flip, Mix, and Yoga.
Hey, we complained so long and hard about numbers for names. You know, the new Sony Vio 3742 FPZ that I think
that's actually one problem with the Lumias, right? They all have these crazy numbers. Right. It's
numbers are not good.
600, 625, 710, 725.
But how about those new Zen books from Asus?
Love Asus stuff as well.
Those.
Yeah.
So I have the second gen Zen book, right? The 13-inch. Yeah. You get that kind of metallic swirly effect
love
on the
that.
Outside. That
yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think the Samsungs have kind of overtaken them as the go to mainstream awesome, you know, ultrabook. And but they're those are nice. I would get a Samsung over an Asus personally, but
would you? I have my Asus still, the one I've been running for 3 years, UL30A.
Yeah. That's like Windows 7. Not quite an ultrabook though, right? Like,
no, but it's so awesome. And it's still kicking. Yeah. It's like,
No, I still have my Asus too, actually. But I did last year. Well, Samsung makes a 15-inch version of their ultrabook, which means it's technically not an ultrabook, I guess, but I love that thing. And my wife uses the 13-inch version of that, which is also really nice. And now they have new versions this year.
The new one, the ZenBook UX301, is the one with the Gorilla Glass lid. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, the outside, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. HP has put the Elites had glass lids. Yeah. I think that's risky. Yeah.
I know.
It's not put glass more right? places. That's than
the
we really
right. That's
need.
What I was thinking. So the point of an ultrabook is you want thin, light, portable, yeah. and yeah. so put glass on the outside. And I don't understand. Like it's can't. It's glass, so it's not protecting anything, yeah. and it's adding weight and thickness. You know why? I don't quite get the point of that. Like it must just look nice. It must be a.
It's pretty. That's what the designer. HPs. You know, they're pretty. But I'm not sure it's a good idea.
Yeah, HP has, Stevie Mac Jr. says, HP just announced the HP Recline touchscreen all-in-one.
Yeah, you seen this one?
Ooh. Yeah, I just started looking at this.
You kind of take the screen and pull it down over the lip of the desk, and then you can play it like a piano or whatever, and you can touch it.
Whatever happened to just plain old laptops, people? Could we just have like a normal? I want a regular old laptop, not these weird like yoga blah hybrid. I just want a clamshell laptop that has a really awesome keyboard. Anybody?
Bueller?
Granted, Mary Jo is someone who prefers to write in notepads. Yeah. So I'm not really.
I know. I'm an audience of one, no, but I'm sure there are other people like me out there who want this.
Does Vizio I use a non-touch ultrabook still.
Does Vizio still make stuff?
Yeah, it's some nice looking ultrabooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all-in-ones too, actually, touch-based.
Yep. Yep.
We should note on all these machines, the one statistic that, well, there's two things we don't know. Price on many of them and battery life on most of them.
I wish they'd say that. I don't understand.
We'll give you one little detail, though. That Toshiba, which looks interesting. I mean, Of course, the Acer W3 looked interesting, and then you actually saw it and you wanted to smash it. The original plan for that device was for it to retail at $279, which would have made it the cheapest Windows tablet by far.
That's a great price.
And I think. But actually, the starting price is not $279. I think it's $329. Hmm. So something changed, and I wonder what that might be, you know, was there, I don't know. I don't know if it's other devices were a little higher in price and they felt like they could do that or.
Yeah. You know.
Maybe they just were lying.
Well, maybe it was just a plan. Actually, okay, I do see. Yeah, there's another tablet may come in as low as $249, but I guess it depends on how that stuff goes. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, chat room saying the Atibook 9 Plus, you know, which
that's nice.
A nice one. And the X1 Carbon, right?
Love the X1 Carbon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the creme de la creme.
And that's the one Mary Jo should consider.
You think I should get that one?
Because it comes in a non-touch version.
And you can get the Carbon or Carbon Touch, and it has great keyboard. Lenovo just does great stuff.
I know. I love Lenovo. And I love the little track button.
You like the nipple? Of course. Who doesn't?
No, but it's, by the way, that thing is so much more precise than a trackpad.
It is. It is.
I love that thing too. And that's that's the thing I miss the most with the Samsung is I don't have that. I have to bring a mouse.
Well, then Mary Jo, you got to get the X1 Touch. I mean, Carbon, not the Touch.
You know what I wish though? I wish that machine looked cooler.
It's industrial looking.
It's industrial looking.
Yeah, it looks like Darth Vader's TIE fighter.
You know? Yeah, it's just, you know, think of it, you know, it's like an Ayn Rand designed
purple.
Actually,
sometimes Lenovo will offer ThinkPads with a red, lid.
Oh,
yep.
But I don't know if they do it.
Call
for
them up. Say, Mr. Lenovo, would you just make one for me? I'm Mary Jo Foley.
I don't think there is a Mr. Lenovo.
Mrs. Lenovo.
I am calling for Bob Lenovo.
They thought it was French. They didn't know. They're Chinese. What do they know? Okay, so Samsung's got a watch. Pretty much everybody and their brother has a watch. Microsoft started this whole thing with the Spot Watch way back when.
Yep.
Where's the Microsoft watch?
Oh, it will come 2 years from now, Leo.
it'll be this big.
The size of a Volkswagen.
It'll be the table.
It is rumored to still be in development. And last thing I think any of us heard or anybody wrote about it was saying it would be out in 2014.
Can I go out on a limb here and just say, hey, Microsoft, you might want to think of, you know, forget the watch. There, you got bigger fish to fry.
I know.
A watch, no.
They're going to do one, though. I'm positive they're going to do
such
one.
Such a Me Too product. Come on.
Right. But everybody else has one, right? And the one characteristic that was rumored about the Microsoft Watch, which might have made it more interesting, and if it does happen, will make it more interesting, is it's not tied to the smartphone like the one announced this week, you know, that you actually will be working with the cloud more with the Microsoft one, and it won't be like you have to have a Windows phone to use this
watch. It'll be cool. You hold it up to the screen, and the screen flashes and programs it. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I love watches. I wear a watch. I actually use a watch to tell time. How retro of me. But I don't know if I want one of those kind of watches. Like, I thought the Samsung one was hideous. Did you? Or did you like it?
I think it looks terrible.
It's hideous.
It looks like that Microsoft watch.
It's hideous, right?
It also looks like something that you don't... Oh, I just asked my phone what time it is, and it's telling me. That's, to me, that's the way it should be. The Microsoft, well, also it's for righties because the camera's on this side, and I like to put my watch on my left hand, which means I'd be taking a picture of my face.
Well, that's just a real early prototype thing too, right?
Is it? That's not the
one. I mean, for Microsoft's one.
Oh, no, I was talking about the Samsung crap.
Oh, Samsung, yeah.
Tied to Samsung's Galaxy Note 3. Right. Although I think that's merely the fact that it needs Bluetooth LE, the low-power Bluetooth, and it needs... Jelly Bean 4.3, and so as soon as they get all their other, because you have LE on the S4, it's just updated.
I can't believe we're even having this conversation. It's like it has a certain version of Android on it, and
who cares?
It's like this stuff is so.
I'm not a believer in watches in general. I like the notion of wearable computing makes a lot of sense to me. I just don't know what you're wearing.
It's good, but I think it's one of those things that maybe falls apart in the real world. Like,
so far.
Even Microsoft's original vision for that smartwatch made plenty of sense, you know?
Right.
This kind of glanceable information. Right. I remember they had all these great scenarios. You're a sports fan, and you're at the football game.
Right.
And, of course, you care about the other football games.
Right.
And so you could bring up your wrist, and it would know it was you. Right. It would know – it could see where you were. And it would know you were at a football game. So it would show you like football scores for teams that compete with yours in the same division. That makes plenty of sense. Except that in real life now, there's a 2,000-foot screen that has this information on it at the stadium at all times. And it's like all of these scenarios kind of break down. Like I had a Timex Data Link watch.
Yeah, right, remember that? 90s. Yeah.
You used to have to hold it up in front of your screen.
The screen would flash.
It would put that dizzying pattern on your screen. It only worked with CRT.
That's why they went out of business. All the LCDs appeared and they couldn't make it work.
Yes. Yeah. So, by the way, if someone wants that watch, it's at the bottom of the Salt River outside of Phoenix. fell off my wrist. It's probably still there.
Yeah, man.
Well, I guess the point to be made is that everything you would want to do with a watch has been done 10 years ago with Microsoft and Timex. And I look at the Pebble watch. It doesn't do anything new. I mean, it gives me alerts from my phone. I mean, I'm not sure.
But because, by the way, what I need is another device in my office.
It's beeping
with
and buzzing.
With a freaking alarm on it.
I know.
Half an hour before this podcast, Leo, it is like a symphony in my office. Every device I own is like... Yeah, because I need that on my wrist. That's where it's not.
I know.
It's not on my wrist.
Yeah. I know. Let's see. What else here? Video messaging comes to Skype and an update for Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, it's about all we have to say.
Okay, there you go. I'm just going to read the headlines.
News of the week.
You tell me if any of it grabs you. The Motorola Microsoft patent case ends in victory.
By the way, I do want to say one thing about that.
What's that?
Motorola, being a part of Google, was trying to soak Microsoft on licensing, right? They said that their standards essential patents were worth billions of dollars a year. I think the figure was $4 billion. Yeah. The court determined that the actual value of those patents was between $1.3 and $1.8 million per year. And that Motorola was in fact acting in bad faith. And a jury awarded Microsoft some tens of millions of dollars.
$14 million. Which is half of what Microsoft wanted.
So in court, yes.
Google's appealing, of course.
A lawyer for Motorola said that their original offer, which was that $4 billion, that's how much they thought, it was just a piece of paper. To which Microsoft's lawyer replied, yes, So is a ransom note.
Good answer.
That was good.
Which good I just answer. Thought was a good one.
And it was a jury trial, so that kind of thing really wins with a jury. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but man. This anyway, case but that, that's a, like a good example years? Of how.
What's that?
Hasn't this been going on for like 3 years? It was about H264, 802.11 wireless. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
They were trying to hold them up over Xbox and Windows.
Oh, they wanted to stop the sale, importing of Windows and Xbox. Right? You talk about going after the, you know, going for the gold on that one. And, you know, that's something you can't do with standards essentials patents, right? But whatever. So it looks like it's going to work out in Microsoft's favor, at least this one.
Where'd you get this picture of the young lady with the tablet saying $110 million? That's not iStock photo. You made that. I like it. She's holding a Surface. That must have been the hardest part about finding that picture.
So I'm amazed I don't get more pushback over any time I use a number because I am the dumbest person on earth when it comes to math. And that $110 million figure is a number that I created using data from other places.
That's you? You came up with that?
Yeah. I mean, it's math that anyone could do. I'm just saying, I'm sort of surprised someone didn't do the math and said, hey, Paul, actually, it's 11 million.
Actually,
I wrote the notes. It was 110, actually.
Yeah. I know. When I read the notes, I thought, boy, I don't know if this is something to trumpet, really.
Let me
110 users. Wow.
Yeah.
So the entire installed base of OS X, just to put this in perspective, is 72 million.
According to Apple.
Yep. That one's not done by Paul's math.
No.
So, I mean, but nobody's ever said that Microsoft doesn't have a dominant position in operating systems.
Well, right. But this is, you know, the OS that no one wants, I guess. And it's during one of the worst years, you know, the PC's ever experienced as far as year-over-year sales decline.
I just think it's
helpful to put that in perspective. Yeah. That's all.
No, I agree 100%.
The one thing I would say is that I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, don't forget that part of the reason this number went up so suddenly, net applications number, is because they changed the way they calculate the number, too.
That's right.
But it actually is a change that actually many people believe makes it more accurate and more fair because it has to do with hidden pages by browser. So they made a bunch of adjustments.
That's a good way to do it, actually.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's also part of the reason it jumped. So suddenly, like you're saying, Paul, in a month when it didn't look like things were going so well for Windows 8, they went up from 5.42% to 7.65%. Wow. Right. So,
I mean, at some point, sometime, Microsoft will eventually have to make some other announcement about license sales for Windows 8. Yeah. It's kind of amazing they haven't done that. But, you know, they made the 100 million announcement back in, May, maybe? It's been a long time. They have not really addressed this. And so that number, whenever it comes out, you have to think if it was May, we got June, July, August, you know, September, let's say is 4 months, 15 million a month is 60 million. Look at me doing math. You know, it's 160 million licenses sold, which leaves a gap of like 50 million, you know, and of course those kinds of things always raise questions, as they should. And I think that represents the number of people, probably corporate users largely, who are, in fact, still downgrading, as they always do.
Right.
In this case, to Windows 7.
Windows phone usage also surging across Europe and Mexico. Surging.
Yeah.
Like a tidal wave.
So in Mexico, Windows Phone is now the number two smartphone platform. And I think it was, what's the name of this company? Kantar or something. They said that this is the first time Windows Phone has ever been number two in a major, you know, in a major market, like one of the top markets. And the other interesting statistic here is that one phone, which is that Lumia 520 I keep talking about, that one you can buy here in the United States for $99, no contract. It's an amazing, if you just use it as a second phone, as a non-phone, just as like a media device, like an iPod Touch type device. $99 now represents 10% of all smartphone sales in Britain, France, Germany, and Mexico.
That's excellent.
So it's not Windows Phone that has 10%. It's one Windows Phone
model.
That's actually really amazing.
That is.
You think it's in the really? U.S. only that the iPhone has all this mind share? And so.
Yeah.
It's really about.
Well, by the way, so the you know, for all this, so there's a lot of good news here for Windows Phone. Some of the bad news is Windows Phone has not done anywhere as well as this in the U.S. Slow growth in the U.S., 3 to 3.5%, according to this company. iOS obviously grew very big. Android actually declined in the United States, according to this company. But in China, which is maybe the, I think right now it's number two, but soon will be the number one smartphone market. Windows Phone actually lost market share in the most recent quarter, dropping from 2.2 to 1.6%. That's not what you want to see. You know, I mean, that is a problem. I feel like Windows Phone could be very successful and never have great market share in the United States, but I don't feel like you can lose both the U.S. and China and have that make sense.
All right, tell you what, let's take a break and come back. We've got picks, we've got enterprise code names, we've got beer, we've got everything that you've been waiting for. The back of the book coming up in just a moment, but first a word from audible.com. It really is but my favorite part was always the back of the book.
I like the back of the book.
I always flip to the back of Shopper, InfoWorld, whatever I was reading, PC Magazine. Our show today brought to you by audible.com, the place to go for audiobooks, the number one marketplace in the world, I'd be willing to venture. With 150,000 titles, you're sure to find something that you want to listen to at audible.com. Audible brought reading back into my life. And I say reading because, you know, I love books. I always loved books, but I never had time after I got into the real world between commutes, work, you know, the kids. I couldn't read anymore. Fortunately, Audible came along right around the year 2000, and I've been a member since they started, and I just love them, and I've read over 500 books. I say read again, but listened to 500 books. Look at this, The Lost Fleet. Oh, wow, on sale. This will get you listening to the Dauntless series by Jack Campbell. There's great science fiction, really great science fiction on audible.com, but that's not all. There's also a great nonfiction. This is an interesting. David Shields has just put out his book on Pierre Salinger, Kennedy's press secretary, and a very interesting guy. No, not Pierre Salinger, J.D. Salinger, another interesting guy. This is I just looked.
You're not the guy in the Celtics whose last name is almost exactly Salinger,
catcher in the Rye guy. This is I cannot wait to read this. I was reading an excerpt the other day. J.D. Salinger, who wrote Catcher in the Rye, partly while he was in the service during World War II, hated the book. It changed his life. He became a recluse in New Hampshire. This is a work of a really great scholarship and apparently fascinating. But the part I read was great. So if you've been if you read as many of us did as teenagers, Catcher in the Rye, we're deeply moved and changed our lives in some ways.
It's huge with serial killers.
Who?
Catcher in the Rye, this figures prominently in a lot of the...
You're kidding.
No, you're kidding.
Wow. No, have you been watching Orange is the New Black? You can read the original.
Not yet.
Great book. I mean, great show and great book, too, Piper Kerman. Red Shirts, John Scalzi's novel, just won the Hugo Award, Best Science Fiction of the Year. Will Wheaton narrates it. Look, I think you're getting some idea. There's some great stuff on audible.com, 150,000 audiobooks. Pick one. You get it for free. Paul, you got a pick for us? Something you're listening to these days?
Yeah. I read this book years ago, but Stephen King has obviously many books full of short stories, and then he has books full of long stories. So Different Seasons is kind of the classic there. I think every one of the stories in that book, and there were only four, have been turned into movies once, one of them twice. Full Dark, No Stars is more recent. I think it's some years. It's probably 10 years old or something, but... it is also a collection of four stories. I've read it in the past. Listening to it on Audible, I've just finished the first one, which is called 1922, which is kind of an excellent turn of the century ghost story from the middle of the country kind of thing. But I actually I walk every day to listen to books. And last night after dinner, I asked my wife if she would drive me to the other end of town so I could walk back and finish the story because I was like so close. And I'm like, I want to finish this.
I love that feeling.
Yeah. And this is a great one.
How many times have I sat in the driveway with a car running?
Yeah, I do the same. Yeah, I walk home and I sit on the front steps just to get through.
It's great.
Yep.
It's great. A little special time listening to great books. Stephen King. They've got thrillers. They've got nonfiction, too. Paul and I love reading history on Audible.com. Here's the deal. If you go to Audible.com/windows, you'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's the book a month account. But the first 30 days, you pay nothing. That first book is free and yours to keep. I think you're going to want to stick around, though. I listen to Audible all the time. I feel like it's my go-to place. Whenever I get a chance, I'm reading a really deep book about psychoanalysis called The Denial of Death. I don't really recommend it. Actually, I do. It's great, but but it's probably not exactly an upbeat book. You might want to read the Jack Reacher novels instead. Genghis Khan and the Making of the Modern World. The movie 50 Shades of Grey is coming soon. You might want to get reading if you want to have all three volumes under your belt.
It's on my calendar.
audible.com/windows.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
And we thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Let's start with Paul Thurrott and his pick of the week, or his tip of the week.
Yeah, I don't just have one pick this week because there's been a lot of apps updated that are important. And so Skype was updated for Windows Phone 8. If you're using Skype on Windows Phone 8, if you're not using it yet, this update adds the video messaging feature that has been around on other platforms already. Cool. So that's a cool feature. Nokia Music was updated this past week, and that's a service I use. It's a really inexpensive alternative to Pandora, Spotify. For $3.99 a month, you get offline capabilities. Multiple devices. It works across Windows Phone, Windows 8, Windows RT. The new version of the app lets you favorite artists and then also get notifications for when artists are going to have a gig locally in your area. You can get a notification for that. So that's a great app that's only getting better. Halo Spartan Assault, that awesome game that came out on Windows 8 RT and Windows Phone 8 last month or in July maybe, has been updated for a second time. And this one has, I think this is the update added additional levels and all that. But they didn't announce this at the time, but it also added support for the Xbox controller on Windows 8 and RT. And so I verified this the other day that if you they have different adapters. You can use an Xbox controller with your PC. I happen to have the wireless adapter. But once you have that enabled on your PC and you run the game, you can change the control system from, they have touch, they have keyboard and mouse, and now they have controller. And that's if you're used to Xbox type gaming, that's actually a great way to play this game. And so plus you can play it on a real PC, right? Which makes sense. I don't think most keyboard is great on a big screen with a real PC, but Xbox controller is really good. I don't follow how this stuff works on iOS and Android, but I feel like I'm saying that name wrong.
Doodle Jump. Yeah, there's a whole series of those, but Doodle Jump is the...
Yeah, so the version on Windows Phone was recently updated, and it gives you like all these different worlds. And so there's like they're not worlds. They're like skins almost. So it can look like Halloween, or it can look like winter, and it can look like, it has all these different kind of themes. This is something that probably came out on iOS 2 years ago, for all I know. I have no idea. But if you have the game, it's a free update, and it's kind of fun. If you get tired of that kind of stock, doodle jump where it literally looks like a paper doodle, you can make it look beautiful. I mean, there's really some really nice looks to it. And then this isn't a free update or an update of any kind, but there's a new version of Temple Run, which, again, is probably not only new to Windows Phone, but since the game probably came out 3 years ago. But Temple Run Oz, which I guess was tied to that Oz movie, is 99 cents. But if you're looking, when you think about games you're going to play in little bursts and, you're standing in line at the supermarket.
Is it the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, it's tied to the, the Oz sequel that came out.
Yeah, the James Franco.
It's a really good one. It's neat. I also found looking this game up, because I have it, but I went to find the link so I could put it in the show notes. And there was a really awful knockoff game in the Windows Phone store that's called something like Oz Temple Run, or it's got a name that's almost, and that's, it's like some terrible complete knockoff. But yeah, Temple Run Oz is the real thing, and it's inexpensive, and it's just a great, great game. So a good choice anyway if you want an actual
pick. Is Call of Duty out yet on iOS, the game you were talking about?
Yes, and it's called
it's got a different name.
Of Duty Strike something.
Okay.
And God, it looks good.
I want to play it. I want to do
Strike Team.
I want to do it for iPad today, and I just didn't see it. All right, let me look.
Okay, it's called Strike Team. Yeah, Strike Team. Call of Duty Strike Team. Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah, it does look good. Ooh. Okay, that's gonna be my pick of the week. Sorry, Paul. Sorry, Paul. Your tip of the week.
So just a reminder that a couple months ago, Microsoft started a promotion for people who have Xbox Live Gold subscriptions. And it is part of this promotion to giving away two free games every month. But you have to go into the console, or I guess you could do it from the web too, and actually make the free purchase, you know, if you will, and then download it to your console to get it. And so each month, I think it's been July, August, now September, on the first of the month, one of the games becomes available. And then on the 16th of the month, the second one becomes available, and they're available during that 2-week time frame. So this month's games are Magic 2013, which is one of those like Magic the Gathering type card type games, which I never really got into, but I'm sure some people are into that. Became available on the first, but on September 16th is Rainbow Six Vegas, and this is a pretty old game. I want to say it came out in like 2006, 2007, somewhere in that time frame, but. This was a game, one of the few games that kind of got me off Call of Duty for a while. It's a Call of Duty style game, but team-based. It has got team-based challenges you can do, and it's got multiplayer and all that kind of stuff. And people are still playing this thing online. And so even though it's kind of several years old, if you're into first-based shooters at all, or first-person shooters, I should say, Rainbow Six Vegas is an awesome game. I'm actually looking forward to playing that one again.
Classic.
So just don't forget you can do that.
Classic. All right, time for you, Mary Jo Foley, to give us an Enterprise pick of the week.
Right, this all seems so long ago because of all the things that have been happening with Microsoft. But remember on September, or was it actually August? Microsoft just recently said Windows 8.1 was RTM, but nobody could get the bits till October 18th. Well, everyone assumed the same was going to be true of Visual Studio, because that also is still just in customer preview.
I had that guy sitting here across from me last week and going,
I know, you should have grilled that guy.
I was being too kind. He must have known this.
So here's the new interesting wrinkle and why Visual Studio 2013 is my pick of the week. The release candidate of Visual Studio has leaked to the web. So there is going to be a build of Visual Studio that comes out for developers before October 18th, I would believe. It's going to be the RC. It's not the RTM we're talking about. But it's very interesting because a few developers who are handpicked by Microsoft, probably Facebook, probably a couple others, are going to get the RTM bits of Windows 8.1. And I hear they are also going to get the Visual Studio 2013 release candidate. Everybody else who wants it, you have to go download it illegally right now because Microsoft hasn't released it. But I think they're probably going to release it sometime in the next couple weeks. That would be my guess. Yeah. So if you're somebody who's developing an app or who just likes to tinker with Visual Studio, you can find those bits out there. And the .NET 4.5.1 build as well, I think, the RC of that.
Very cool. And the code name pick of the week reminds me of baking.
The code name pick of the week this week is coming from these reports we've talked about a couple times on the show where I believe it's Microsoft probably who gave this to the New York Times and All Things D, but they gave them, and also Reuters, they gave them the code name of what this whole Microsoft-Nokia partnership was. And the code name was called Project Gold Medal. That was the secret code name for the deal coming down between the two. And here's the even more fun part of this. So In Project Gold Medal, Microsoft's code name for itself was Edwin Moses, the American track and field athlete
who won a gold medal. Yeah, yeah.
And Nokia's code name for itself was Nurmi, after Paavo Johannes Nurmi, the 9-time gold medal
runner. The line of desks from IKEA.
Yeah.
The Nurmi line.
His nickname was the Flying Finn.
What year was that?
I don't know, but that... I don't know what years those were, but those were all the different code names they used, which is kind of fun, like a fun fact, right? Like, that's why nobody found out about these things, because they were using all these weird code names.
He must have been one of those guys that, like, skied, shot a gun, and then snowshoed across 24 miles of you know, wilderness.
This is like 1938. Right. It's not... let's see. No. He died in 1973. So...
Who, the Flying Finn?
The Flying... There were several, it turns out, Flying Finns, but Paavo Nurmi, or Nurmi... When is, I mean, look how skinny he is. That's he could fly because he weighed 3 pounds. There he is.
Oh, my God.
That's an interesting code name.
Yes. I like all those code names. Like They're those. Pretty fun.
I like them. Fun Project ones. Gold Medal with Edwin Moses, who's more recent. Wasn't he one of the athletes who raised the Black Power fist? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, was he?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
Could be.
Beer. We can't go without beer. We need beer. Yeah. Give us beer.
So, you know, this was a long week for me and Paul. We came off the Labor Day weekend having to stay up and, like, get up. And I was up at 2 a.m. on the night that the Microsoft Nokia news broke. So I was really ready for my beer that night.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, at my local Rattle and Hum, they had Founders KBS, which is the Kentucky Breakfast Stout. It's, like, one of the best Founders beers ever. It's an imperial stout aged in oak bourbon barrels. And
that sounds
it tastes
good.
Amazing. It's not for the faint of heart because it's like 11.2%. So I didn't have a ton of them. I would have just keeled over if I had.
Wow.
But it's really hard to get. But a few times a year, you see it show up in different beer markets. And if you ever get a chance to try Founders KBS from Founders Brewing in Michigan, it's one of the best imperial stouts. Delicious. They call it Kentucky Breakfast Stout because you could... feel like you could drink that for breakfast.
It's hearty. A very hearty.
It's like oatmeal, yes, but beer.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Oh, and I messed up my beer pick of the week last week.
What?
I've gotten a couple notes on that. So I was talking about Dieu du Ciel, remember?
Right.
And so both Unibrow and Dieu du Ciel are in Quebec, but they're two separate breweries, and I messed up their brews. So sorry, Canadians.
They should be just happy you even mentioned them.
Now, a lot of people like those. A lot of people like those beer picks because Canada brews some really awesome beer. So sorry I messed that up.
Well, there you go. There you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Windows Weekly for the week of September 5th, 2013. The day Nokia fell. Paul Thurrott is
the stars missing in the sky.
Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And if you're a Windows one of the 4.7%, the Windows phone book at windowsphonebook.com is free and available for your download.
It's going to be big in Mexico.
Huge in Poland.
I'm going to have to do a Spanish version.
You should.
That'll be something I can occupy the next year of my life.
That's a good idea. You also can find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com, where she covers Microsoft, two of the best, really. And we're always thrilled that you can you do this show with us. We do it every Thursday, by the way, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. If you want to watch live, just tune to twit.tv any time of the day or night. And we've always got great programming. Thursdays is Windows Weekly. You can also visit us in studio. We have two very nice people visiting us. N2XWS, John's visiting from, where are you from, John?
Central New York.
Central New York, just up the road a piece.
Does he work on Visual Studio? Because I have a future.
That poor guy, he is never going to come back.
He was great. This is last week. He's on the engineering team for Visual Studio, and he was just...
Would you say he seemed relaxed?
Yeah.
Like he wasn't freaked by a schedule?
No, he seemed like he was... and he was nodding...
He's just chilling.
Smiling? Was he smiling?
Smiling.
Not nervously, but just
a little
naturally.
Bit of a vacation going on. I'm thinking.
Yep.
I should have read the signs.
Yep.
And you are from?
Tom from Kelowna.
Tom from Kelowna, California. BC. Oh, Kelowna, British Columbia. Yeah. Wow. So it's great to have you both in studio. If you want to visit during the show or any of our shows, email tickets at twit.tv so we can make sure we'll put a chair out for you. We always leave the light on. You can also get this show after the fact, twit.tv/ww, or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and distributed. via the internet. I hope you will do so. Please subscribe. That way you'll not miss an episode. Paul, Mary Jo, have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Mm-hmm.